Welcome to episode 104 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Having done a pretty long and intense episode, or a few long and intense episodes recently, today we're going to take a little easy and I'm going to talk about a number of images that I've uploaded since our last single exposures episode. Before we go on, I wanted to say a quick thanks to all of you that have mailed or posted comments in the forum about our first roundtable style podcast, which was episode 102. It seems that many of you really enjoyed this podcast and have let us know, which is great, obviously. And I also wanted to quickly mention that I recorded the first roundtable with my own voice on one channel and Forrest and Evans lines on the other channel, so we came out of different speakers. Having recorded it like that, I was pretty much committed to releasing it that way, but I realised while editing it that it was a little bit annoying, and I've received a few mail from people telling me so, really I just wanted to mention that I'll be going to a mono recording for the next round table. That way participants will be heard from both speakers, so thanks very much for your feedback on this too, it really all does help. In episode 97, we looked at a number of photos from the Nature Research Institute near my apartment here in Tokyo. I go there quite often, especially when I think there'll be plenty of bugs around to shoot. That was the main theme through episode 97. I went back to the Institute a few weeks later and uploaded another handful of shots from the day, but not enough to do a full podcast. So today I wanted to first look at a couple of my favourites from that day. Let's look at image number 1505 to begin with. I called this image Imagination as I left quite a lot to your imagination. Also, as you'll see, I used a very shallow depth of field to throw the majority of the image out of focus, again giving us a departure from reality. I actually set up my camera on a tripod with the 100mm f2.8 macro lens and a 25mm extension tube because there was a spider on the underside of the leaf. That's the main reason that I set up the shot. He was walking around quite a lot, and I got a few shots with the spider in full view as well, but I really ended up sort of liking this one more because of the overall softness of the bucket, which was there, I guess, in the other shots. But the way the spider's leg is just sort of sneaking in from out of that bucket from the bottom of the image. So, you really sort of get a sense that you don't quite know what it is. But it's there and it sort of draws your eye over to the bottom right corner. So because I was shooting slightly larger than life, all of the hairs on the leaf are also visible, as well as some detail along the line of that line of focus there, some detail in the surface of the leaf, enabling us to just see how close really we're looking at this macro scene. I was using ambient light, and the shutter speed was 1/20th of a second at f4. This is pretty slow shutter speed, and had there been any wind, I wouldn't have been able to shoot this either without some artificial light like the twin light or without the subject becoming blurred. To get a shutter speed as fast as this, although it's slow, I had to raise the ISO to 250, and I probably couldn't have gotten any lower than 1/20th of a second even with a tripod. I wanted to look at one more from this day, which is image number 1508. Here I shot the fruit after the flowers have died back on an agrimony plant, and agrimonies grow to be quite tall and they're very convenient for photographing. I was standing almost straight. I think I was just sort of bending my neck down a little to get a view into the viewfinder, which makes a change for macro work. This time I shot with ISO 400, again at f4 though, and this gave me a shutter speed of 1/100th of a second. I was still shooting with the 100mm macro with the 25mm extension tube on, so I'm pretty close here again, having positioned the seeds here with the lens pre-focused at the shortest focusing distance. I set the exposure manually and pushed it as far as I could before going overexposed so that the greens came out as bright as possible. It's the brightness of these greens and the warm yellow-brown that makes this shot for me. I think that just the greens alone would have been okay, but those splashes of yellow-brown really sort of make it much more appealing. Seeking out this kind of complementary colour can really help liven up your shots. And if you take a look at the colour wheel in the quick links at in the top menu at martinbaileyphotography.com, you'll see that these two colours are pretty much next to each other at the top left and right of the wheel. Being opposite will, of course, give the most dramatic effect, but also being like, you know, two-thirds, if you separate it out into two-thirds, as in the RGB or the CMY, that will also give you good contrasting colours. Or actually, they're also known as complementary colours. So, you know, these sort of things are worth bearing in mind when you're picking your subjects. And these here really are they're very pure forms of these particular colours, so that's what makes them work as well, even though they're just sort of equally spaced out but next to each other on the colour wheel. And also, you know, keeping those colours nice and vibrant, as I said, making sure that I was close to being overexposed but not quite, you know, that will also help to really sort of bring your shots out and give them a little bit of punch. It was by no means bright. It was a relatively overcast day, so you know, I've really sort of falsely brought this out, but I think it works. The next shot that I wanted to look at is image number 1514, which was actually shot almost 2 years ago in November the 3rd, 2005, at the Ueno Zoo here in Tokyo. This beautifully ugly bird is a shoebill stork, and I just love them. They're like, I think they have two pairs at the zoo. And, you know, at least when I shot this a few years ago. And he or she was sort of sitting on a nest, a big sort of stick nest. And I don't think there was an egg in there. It was just having a rest. You know, I shot this through a large sort of, you know, largely spaced mesh wire fence with my 100 to 400 millimeter lens. And the focal length was set to 250 millimeters. So you can tell that I was really quite close to the enclosure, and the bird was right next to the edge of the inside of the enclosure too. I was shooting with the camera set in aperture priority mode, and I used minus one-third exposure compensation, giving me a shutter speed of 1/400th of a second. The aperture was set to f5.6, by the way. I was actually shooting at ISO 800 to get this shutter speed, as I was zooming anything up to 400 millimeters, and I needed a fast shutter speed to sort of stop the, you know, just basically prevent camera shake. There isn't a lot of worry about subject movement with these storks, as they move very slowly and deliberately. I've seen them in a documentary before, and they actually spend hours and hours just sort of standing over the water in these like marshlands. I think it was Africa. And they just wait, and then after about 6 or 8 hours or so, when a really big fish comes by, literally they don't hunt, they just wait. And when it swims by under them, they strike with like lightning speed, and then they get one large meal. And I think because they move so slowly, their metabolism is also pretty low. And so I think that this one meal a day, I'm not sure, maybe they do two, but it seems to be enough for them. For those of you that have listened to episode 1 of this podcast way back in September, what will that be, 2005, I also spoke about an image from right next to this. It was shot right next to this compound of a pink flamingo. And that was a few months before this, I think, that I shot that. But you'll perhaps recognise those colours there in the background of the next shot, which is image number 1516. The main subject, of course, is another shoebill, but this time with a view from the side, but slightly behind the bird for a nice profile. I have used the bright pink of the flamingos and their reflections in the water in their compound to sort of act as an effective background for this magnificent shoebill. There are also two patches of dark either side of the frame, which I, if I recall correctly, were trees, and they really helped me to frame the shot and bring it all together. Also, the back of the shoebill's head is nicely sort of lined up with that dark on the left side, which helps to emphasize the line of his head and those sort of wacky feathers on the back of his head. Yet the pink flamingos are just cutting into the shot there, into the frame, at the nape of the shoebill's neck. Also had like a splash of color to break up the monotony. So this was shot with the same settings as the last image, but as I was in aperture priority mode, this time the shutter speed had increased to 250th of a second. Still enough to capture this bird nice and sharp, and I was lucky enough to get a little bit of catch light there in the eye. A few weeks ago, I did a podcast about testing my new 85mm f1.2 lens, and I've been carrying around with me quite a lot since, as you can imagine. And this has really been the only way that I've managed to do any photography in recent weeks, so being so busy with other things. The oppressive heat in Tokyo is starting to subside though now, and hopefully within a few weeks I'll start to get out a little bit more. I should be able to get more time as well. But for now I've been keeping my stress levels down by shooting the odd image here and there with the new 85mm lens. With that, I thought I'd share with you a few of those photos as well today. The first one is image number 1520, which is shot at the temple next to where I work in my day job, which is called Daienji. In this shot, we can see a whole load of Mizuko statues with orange bonnets. And I've mentioned this before some time ago when we looked at some Mizuko from another temple. But there's a sad story behind these statues. They are created by the temple and then they're placed like this to help parents to get over the loss of a baby or a small child that maybe if it was a baby that would have miscarried or died at birth, or even one that they had to abort for some reason or another. I don't think that it really matters what happened, but these statues are there. They're put there to help the family left behind by any child that didn't make it into this world, maybe died in the process or exited shortly after entering this world. This is why they have those little kiddies' bonnets on. The Mizuko, really are. It's they're pretty sad things, but I think that having accepted that. These small little statues with the bonnets, they do make a relatively good photograph. And Mizuko, by the way, actually, the two characters that make that up mean water child. I shot this at f1.4 at ISO 100 on a somewhat overcast day, and I still got a shutter speed of 1/1000th of a second. Needless to say, at that speed I was hand-holding, and I used the f1.4 to give me just a tad more depth of field so that I could get the statues either side of one of, the one just off center that I'd focused on, get either side also in focus. I shot in manual mode, and I shot a couple of test shots basically because I wanted to check the histogram. And then made sure that the red hadn't hit the right shoulder of the histogram that would have indicated that the oranges were starting to blow out. I was pushing the exposure here though, and what I really wanted to do was to make those oranges jump out at me. Also in the grounds of the Daienji Temple is the Yakushi Nyorai, which is basically the statue that we can see in image number 1522. A type of Buddha statue. People buy sheets of gold leaf from the temple there for $5 a pop, and then they sort of apply it to the statue at a point that they have some pain or ailment on their own body. There's a plaque with some text to the right of the statue. It's basically a chant that they have to sort of sing, or they say, not sing, but say, chant it out while they apply the gold leaf. And basically, I decided to sort of shoot this just because it was such a stunning image. I was actually amazed. I've worked in this building for 7 years, and I've not sort of ventured in any further than the gates. So I was pleased that I did sort of do that. I planned before leaving the house. It was a Saturday, and I was just going into town to do a bit of shopping. But I decided to take a look because I wanted to shoot these statues, because I know that, I was really trying to just playing with the 85mm with the wide aperture. I decided to sort of go as wide as possible this time, and not even give it a click down. Really what I was trying to do was to get rid of the background totally, and also just because I was trying to get a handle on just how much depth of field I get with this lens used wide open. I actually opened it, like I said, right up to f1.2 for this, and it was still just sharp as tacks, as the tests proved the other week. So I kept the exposure toned down by selecting 800th of a second this time, and I was still using ISO 100. This was to make sure that the gold came out nice and yellow or gold, and so that I didn't blow out the highlights on this highly reflective subject, but also because I wanted the background to be not only blurred but dark. So I, you know, to help me do that, I really just sort of, I guess I should say as well that it was in a lot more shade than the Mizuko statues that we were looking at earlier. So we can't really, use a direct correlation between the exposure settings that I used for the last shot. But basically, I was underexposing slightly here to just sort of tone it down, keep the golds nice and gold, and to make the background as dark as possible without the main subject going underexposed. And I think it worked pretty well. It really sort of makes the statue jump out at us. And, you know, the background is almost unnoticeable. There's a few tones in there. And what you'll see as well from the very shallow depth of field is that only the face and part of the chest of the statue is in focus. I did try a few where I paralleled up the hands and the face there, so that the hand was also in focus, but I don't think it really needs to be. You know, we know what a hand looks like, and it all sort of came together much better in this one, and the background worked better with this as well. So all of this with the tight crop helped to sort of build a little bit of tension and drama here. So I quite like this as a photograph. Okay, so I was in two minds as to whether or not to include this next shot. It does feel a little bit vain, but as a photo, I quite like it, so I've uploaded it to talk about here. Let's look at one last shot for today, which is image number 1523. There's been a bit of discussion on the MBP forum recently about what I look like, and I realise that many of you have probably not looked at the bio page on the website, and even those of you that have only seen relatively old photos of me that weren't really particularly close up either. That and the fact that I wanted to shoot a better image for the workshops page that I put together last week drove me to shoot this self-portrait. Of course, I used the 85mm for this. It's a portrait lens, right? And I set it up on a tripod in my kitchen with a gradual grey screen behind me. And I basically just shot about 30 images with the cable release. It was almost dark when I shot the images, but I wanted to use the ambient light coming through the kitchen window. I had to get up a few times and check the exposure and what have you, and, you know, I also checked that I was in the frame and in the right place, as I was cropping quite tightly. I tried a few different angles for my head, and sort of, you know, having shot a whole bunch of images, I just found that this one was the closest to how I think I look, which I think is important for a portrait. And this is actually it was much more, because you know that I'm not that much of a portrait photographer. So it was actually a learning thing for me as well to realize that, you know, that I think the best portraits are going to be ones where people find that they look like themselves or better than they are. And the ones that don't flatter you are the ones that you're going to want to just delete. So, you know, anyway, as I was sort of shooting this, I found that this one was the closest to how I look. And the other 29 or so just had some fat middle-aged bloke in there. So I can hear you saying right now that there's a fat middle-aged bloke in this one too. But at least this one looks like how I think I look. So I had one tip regards this image. And I found that on checking the first few, that because I was relying totally on autofocus for this, the camera was actually focusing on my glasses. So for each shot, I was half pressing the shutter release, the cable release there to focus, and then moving my head forward by a centimeter or so, so that I got my eye in sharpest focus and not my glasses. And I imagine that this would also be a problem for shooting people with glasses at any time with autofocus. So, you know, whether or not you're doing self-portraits or normal portraits, maybe this is something to bear in mind. So I learned a few things by doing this as well. So I guess that's the other reason why I sort of pushed myself to share it, besides, I think it won out over the reasons why not to share it. So I was actually in two minds for another reason, and that's because at this size you can clearly see some of the age lines on the side of my left eye, which is the right eye, the eye to the right of this shot. And I figured though that this is me at age 40, and I just thought I should stick it there anyway. Worrying about stuff like that would make it even vainer, I guess. So I just put the reality there. I shot this at f2, by the way, for 1/25th of a second at ISO 200. So you can tell that the light levels were dropping quite low by the time I shot this. Anyway, that's me. And if you haven't seen me before, you can take a look. But just don't look too closely, okay? So a bit of a quick one this week. We haven't just taken time to look at images for a while, so hopefully this will be a nice breather for you, as well as giving me to sort of catch up on a few other things that I've got to do. Don't forget the Hokkaido workshop that I spoke about the last episode, episode 103. If you are interested in joining us, please do take a look at www.mbpworkshops.com. which is the site that I've put together to publish all the details and the pricing, etc. And there's also a way there to book your slot. If you have got any questions after reading the page and listening to episode 103, then please do drop me a line at workshops@martinbaileyphotography.com. And that's it for today. We have been played in by an artist called Shams, and the track name was A Higher Realm. So that's it. Like I say, there's nothing else really that remains to be said, except thanks very much for listening, and you have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.